What's up, guys? We are back, your High Street Freaks, and it is decidedly the off season at this point. And so we're going to talk about what you do in the off season, recruiting. But honestly, we're not really going to do like recruiting updates. We're just going to bitch about a recruiting problem that Ohio State has had, a talent acquisition problem. And my resident bitcher about problems is my co-host here, Ryan. You wrote an article this week that we're going to kind of dive into, and I think we're excited about that. But before we get into it, how are you doing? Because that's all that matters.
Oh, I'm living, baby. I'm living. It is my, in between now and our next podcast, that I will be turning 30 years old. Yeah.
It'll get me in July.
Yeah.
So
we're both getting there. So it's, I don't know. I don't really know if I feel any different about it. I guess maybe I haven't, like, people keep asking me this week. So I guess I'm thinking about it because they're asking me.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm ready to be 30. I think it seems kind of nice. I'm kind of I'm kind of enjoying aging. Yeah.
I think my whole thing, I never really had like a plan for my life past like 25. And I used to joke like I didn't plan to live past 25. And like, I guess that's kind of true, because like, if I didn't plan what my life would be after I turned like 25, then I guess I didn't have a plan for living. But like, you kind of just like,
I feel the same way. Yeah.
It's like a middle class, like, you know, I'm the youngest of several kids that went to college and stuff too. And so like, it just felt like I just like knew what I was going to do. Like I was just going to go to middle school, go to high school, go to college, you know, get a job, get married. And then like past that point, I just like kind of just like had, I had no idea what I wanted to do or like what I wanted my life to look like. And so now it's like, that sounds like depressing. And it's like, I've kind of just accomplished everything that I just like kind of thought I was doing, but it's actually completely liberating, because it's like, I can do whatever I want. Like I can just decide what I want to do now. And it's really cool, because like now I am like very free to just do whatever. And I have like adult money to do whatever with. And so it's awesome.
It is a real point of liberation. Like you have a wife, right? I'm on my way to that here pretty shortly. Have a little money in the bank. You have a little more financial freedom. You got to work on some passion projects. You have, you know, like a little stability. I don't think you guys have bought a house yet. I'm not either.
No, we have not. Next up.
And then, you know, I don't know, maybe start churning out kids at some point.
Yeah,
it is kind of like, I agree with you. I think that exact sentiment is exactly what I feel. And I don't know why we're getting so existential on this football podcast. But yeah, it's kind of like,
it's who we are.
I've hit the part that I thought would happen. Or like you said, I kind of had an idea for in my head. Like I graduated college. I worked for, you know, I've been working the whole time, but I got some time to travel a bit and go around. And that's great. Like, that's cool. I had more experience in my life than I don't know if I ever expect to have as a kid. Like things you dream of, but not sure if you were going to get. I'm like, shit, I've got another 50 bonus years coming up. Like, what do I do next?
Yeah, right.
What happens?
It's pretty cool.
I'm excited about it.
And you're spending it talking to these fine people about Ohio State football.
Oh, yeah. And what else would I rather do, honestly? What else in life is better than talking, or perhaps more appropriately, bitching about the Bucks? It is... I've told this in the podcast before, so I'm probably repeating myself, but my girlfriend was stunned when I mentioned that I really can tell like the passage of time by what was happening with Ohio State football at the time. You and I
100%
pod previously.
100%.
Yeah, it's like, that's kind of how a lot of think of my, that's how I think about a lot of my life milestones and like relate at the time is what was happening at that time.
No, like seriously, when you say a year in time, especially like some of the more recent ones, mostly because I just like don't remember like much about like, I don't know, like 2001 or whatever, but like
the more
recent one, like if somebody says 2016, I just like envision like, you know, Malik Hooker and like Curtis Samuel and like that year.
Yeah. Like, and I'm like, you know, okay, who was I watching those games with?
Yeah.
You know, what is that group I was with? Tell me about what stage of my life I was at. What else was going on? And
like
2018.
I remember. So like I got my cat in 2018. And I remember that I got my cat in 2018 because I got him the week before the Penn State game the 2018 Penn State game where Dwayne Haskins led the like comeback in Penn State. And like, that's how I remember how old my cat is, because I remember that I got him the week before that game. So like, yes, that is insane. But yeah, that's 100%.
It's even legit. Dumb little stuff too. It's like, I was trying to remember like which summers at Ohio State I spent on campus, which ones like I was back home in Pittsburgh for. And I can remember that like I spent the summers of 2014 and 2015 at Ohio State and not in Pittsburgh because I was driving to Columbus when Braxton Miller's shoulder announcement got torn that summer of 2014. And I was like, oh, okay. So I had to be going there to move back in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just when your life like revolves around it, it makes perfect sense. Like that's just, but people cannot comprehend. It's very funny that like my wife at least like understands it a little bit, but like she doesn't get like the, like, I don't know. She doesn't get like the obsessive nature of it and how like yeah. they'll just be time. Like, you know, like the joke about like guys can just spend hours just saying names of old players. Like sometimes mm-hmm. me and my friends will do that and she'll be like, God, like use your brain for good. Like there's gotta be some better use for like your brain capacity than remembering like a punt returner from like 2009 or whatever.
It is true. Like we could have just done this for like coding or something, yeah. AI, and been wealthier men. But who wants that? I don't know. Like it really is like, this is as perverse as this may be. There are few things that are as rewarding in life as like a championship in sports, even though you had nothing to do with it. Because of all the years of like emotional inner turmoil you experience, like ruined days, ruined weeks, stress, increased heart rate and blood pressure, just because you care about it for really no other reason than just like some, you know, decision you made as a child or like some association you have. But that's make the payoff so fucking worth it. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
It's incredible. And the funniest thing about me personally, though, is I am very much the type of person that doesn't worry about things that I can't control. And like, I'm not a worrier. Like, I don't like spend much time obsessing over things that like, if it's out of my control, I have, you know, it has nothing to do with me. I just kind of like set it aside. But that's like literally what being a sports fan is. I can't control this shit at all. But it like my life revolves around it and it like determines my happiness, you know, like I don't control what play Ryan Day is going to call on 4th-and-1. That shouldn't affect my life at all, but it does.
Oh, it does massively. And the fact that, you know, there are millions of other people watching the same thing as you at the same exact time, feeling the same way. It is like, it's one of the only, like, live sports are one of the only things we have left as a community, like, in the world.
Yeah.
It's, like, one of the only communal experiences you still get, you know, like, after Game of Thrones ended. It's just live sports. Like, it really is, like, I don't know, man. It's something, there's something different to it. There's something different to it. But, hey, look, here's the thing. If you, the listener, as we know you already are just like us, and you want to come join a bunch of like-minded freaks who feel the same way you do, who experience the same emotions you do, we're just obsessed and, you know, perverted over the the football obsession as you are, you can come boogie on meetatmidfield.com, our website. Me and Kevin and our good friend Patrick Mayhorn write articles there. We have coverage of Ohio State, of Michigan, of the entire Big Ten, of the entire national college football scene. I wrote an article last week that we're going to discuss in detail today about Ohio State's player acquisition and how it compares to other teams around the country. But we also write all kinds of content. I'm in the middle of my quarterback rankings for the season. I ranked 110 FBS quarterbacks across 86 schools with statistical profiles and some film watching. There is content like that all off season. Kevin's doing great stuff. Me and Patrick are doing the conference and team previews and position previews. All of that's underway now. So it might be the off season, but if you want to get a head start on being as freaky as you can be with college football, it is the perfect time to subscribe to Meet at Midfield and get ready for the season while you are waiting for NCAA 25 to drop and you're waiting for the season to get here. We've got you covered. We got plenty of shit going on.
Yeah. And I'd argue that the preseason is when you get your absolute money's worth in terms of content and stuff like that, that's cranking out. Like we have got you covered in terms of, you know, preseason previews and stuff like that. So, yeah, man, come boogie, come hang out with us on the boards, come, argue with us online. That's kind of, that's actually like, if we had a mission statement, it would probably be like arguing online, like something about arguing online. Cause I think like we have been, we are built as a website about arguing online, and just generally bitching about things that are out of our control. So in the spirit of bitching about things that are out of our control, I think that's what this entire podcast is going to be about. Cause you just wrote an article that was essentially complaining that Ohio State is really lagging in the talent acquisition department. Kind of a subject that would make Urban Meyer turn in his grave if he was dead, but he's still kicking as of now.
As far as we know. Yeah. And it does probably sound insane, right? If you're a fan who casually follows the sport, or you just check the recruiting rankings, you would look at it and say, well, shit, Ohio State's a top 3 to 5 recruiting class every single year. They're third in the country and you know, recruiting talent on player average. All those things are true, but there's also a lot more information to be gleaned than that. And this kind of player acquisition conversation is something that I kind of understood intuitively just from like my years of following the off seasons, right? Like talking about players they miss on the transfer portal, times they weren't aggressive enough, signing a small class or missing your number at defensive end or running back 2 years in a row. Like when those kinds of things happen, obviously it has consequences, right? When you don't hit your number, you don't bring in the right number of talent. The quality is great, but when you bring in the right quantity of talent, it has problems of its own. We've also talked about, you know, players hanging out in the roster for too long. So I think I kind of intuitively felt all this stuff, but I also know that my label and to, you know, our label as a website has been that we're Ryan Day haters. And look, I'll wear that proudly. I am a Ryan Day hater. But I also know people wouldn't really take my word for it unless I backed it up with data. So I decided to get the data. I wanted to prove that I was right about it. It wasn't just some like wild hair of an idea that I had or an empty bitching point. I wanted to prove that I was right. So that's what I did. So with that in mind, I think we're going to talk about where Ohio State falls short in player acquisition, right? So what I did is I went through information for what I consider kind of like the 16 teams in the national title picture or the playoff picture, teams that have this mixture of on-field success and, you know, talent acquisition success, whether that's in recruiting or the transfer portal. I looked at them over the 5-year period of 2020 to 2024. I also looked at the entire Big Ten for further context. The common talking point is people saying that the Big Ten, you know, acts differently in the SEC, they're more cautious, yada, yada, different requirements. I think all that's horseshit, but I did look it up just to prove that I was still right. So Kevin, I went through these title contenders first. I'm sure you read the article, but just humor me here. Do you know where Ohio State ranked among those 16 teams in the number of players, excluding special teams for everyone, that they acquired in this 5-year period?
I do not, just for the sake of argument.
They finished 15th among all those teams. The only team that acquired fewer players than Ohio State in that range was Clemson, because Clemson only took 2 transfer players. One of them was a guy who used to play for them who came back. There was one true transfer they took. So Clemson added 110 players. It is, to be fair, a big jump to Ohio State, who took 126 players over that time. They're kind of right behind Notre Dame, but 129. Penn State and Michigan were both identical. They both signed 117 high school players and 20 transfers for exactly 137 players. Kind of funny synchronicity. Tennessee had 142. Georgia and Texas were at 144, so about 20 more players than Ohio State over a 5-year period. LSU had 152. Oregon had 156. That is 30 more players than Ohio State. Miami had 158. Alabama had 159. A&M had 160, Florida State had 161, Ole Miss had 165, and Oklahoma had 167, which is, again, 41 players more than Ohio State, or about an average of 8 players per year. That's a lot of players, Kevin. That is like 2 full recruiting classes over a 5-year period. That's a big difference.
That's crazy. and that's not as long of a time as you would expect. Like, and we're gonna get into it, but like, essentially an entire recruiting class's worth of players is just essentially fewer ping pong balls you have before trying to get hit bingo or whatever. You know, like, it's just you want as many chances to develop high level players as possible. And if you're just essentially giving up a recruiting class over a 5-year span, that's not great. I will say, I will say it does look like there's a nice little like bell curve here too, because on the flip side, bringing in, I mean, look at Florida State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma on this end, where you're bringing in like 170 players on the high end. Like that feels like you just, that feels like you just suck at recruiting and you're just like trying to fix it through the portal and stuff. Like that's, So,
yeah. And there's some a context sweet spot here, right? Like Oklahoma, Florida State, Miami, Oregon, LSU, Texas, Tennessee, and Notre Dame all had coaching changes in this range. I'm not counting the player, like the guys who just had one. You know, Alabama just had a change this offseason. Michigan just had a change. I'm not including those. But a lot of these schools did have a coaching change that time period, which leads to more transfer portal departures, which leads to more acquisitions to backfill. Like, that stuff does happen. But if you look at, like, the consistency aspect, yeah, I mean, Penn State, Michigan, Georgia, you know, getting an extra 10 to 20 players, or Texas, you know, also Alabama, getting an extra 10 to 20 players, or 30 in Alabama's case, over the course of 5 years is a lot. It's a lot. It's a huge difference. Because what happens is when you acquire more players, by necessity, you have to push out players at the bottom of your roster, right? That's what always happens.
Right.
You only get 85. And actually, it's a point I discussed in the article. The 85 limit isn't even real anymore, right? Which is even more reason to be oversigning. Like, there were articles about Oregon, Nebraska, and Michigan who all this year are going to be significantly over the 85 cap because what they've done is just start using their NIL collectives to pay scholarships to players who would be scholarship players that are over the 85. Yeah. So they're just having, in some cases, 95, 98 scholarship players in the team, which is a huge difference if you compare it to walk-ons. In fact, Ohio State right now is at 82 scholarship players. They're under the limit. So they have 16 fewer players than Oregon does. I think around 20 fewer players than Michigan does of scholarship quality who are recruited as scholarship players. That's a fucking quarter of Ohio State's roster those teams have extra.
That's crazy.
A lot, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. That's the sort of thing that matters, not even just for like talent development, but like just straight up depth. Like at some point, like
for depth, yeah.
At
for
some point, you're just
too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. No. I was just meaning like, especially when you're making seasons longer and it seems like the seasons are only going to get longer at this point too. Like, and you just are not taking advantage of the number of players that you could have that are like capable of playing. That's just, yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, I mean, Ohio State's talking about putting players like Inky Jones and T.C. Caffey, who are like fine walk-ons. Like, I don't care if a walk-on a year gets a scholarship if it works out and it's like appropriate in the numbers. I don't love it, but it's okay. But those are guys who are like redshirt sophomores and juniors who still have multiple years left. Like, you're going to give them a scholarship for what? They're like, they weren't a recruited player. You know who they are.
Right.
And it's also not like a Big Ten thing either, right? I think there are some arguments that people have made that it's like, well, the Big Ten doesn't oversign the way the SEC does. First of all, childish argument. The Big Ten has oversigned for years. Everyone oversigns. Like, the only way you win in college football is oversigning because you have transfer portal losses. But Ohio State is still on the bottom of the bell curve in the Big Ten. They are of the 16 or what is it? No, the 18 new Big Ten teams. They are 16th. And player acquisitions over that 5-year period. They have a whole almost 40 players fewer than Indiana. I know it's Indiana. I'm not saying that's awesome, but I mentioned Penn State, Michigan earlier. I mentioned Oregon earlier. Same is true of Nebraska and USC and Washington. You know, a lot of big time programs who've had success in differing levels. These teams are adding more players. Like, you have to, right, to churn through your roster. It has to happen. That's how you get good.
Right.
It's by getting rid of your lowest performers. Like, and the point here too, right, is that Ohio State recruits at almost identically the same level as Georgia. I did the player averages over this 5-year period. Ohio State's average player ranking and out of high school signees only was a 93.45. Georgia's was a 93.46. The difference is that Georgia signed 15 more high school players than Ohio State. Alabama's is about a point better at 94.4. They signed 20 more players than Ohio State. When you're talking about 15 to 20 more players, the exact same talent level, and a 93 average is like a top 150 player. If you get 15 or 20 extra top 150 players yep. over a 5-year period to build your roster, like, yeah, of course you're going to be better and have more depth. Of course you're going to have more pros. That's what happens, right? It's natural. That's what, like, that's one of the biggest changes that Urban Meyer made when he took over for Jim Tressel, or technically Luke Fickell, but, you know, is that Fickell had been doing this old school style recruiting where you like took 15 in Ohio, like Ohio guys per year, and then filled out the rest of your class, the few Florida kids, and hope you win one or two national recruitments. But by and large, you just kept it local. And Urban Meyer said, fuck that. We're going to go out and offer 300 guys a year and take national players and go get, you know, kids from Florida, New York, and Texas, and California. And that changed the way Ohio State's roster was composed.
And it's especially like, do you remember how much he bitched about the scholarship reductions when they had like, had like three fewer scholarships?
Exactly how Ohio State is choosing to operate of its own volition this year. They're intentionally giving themselves that reduction.
He talked so much about how like Ohio State was like hamstrung because they had three fewer scholarships than like, he was like distraught that Ohio State had scholarship reductions because he wanted 85. Like that dude signed, he had a roster of 90 players and cut five, like in the last, like it's even funnier because like, I remember the days when it would be Ohio State would be over the 85 mark. Like at this point, like they'd be at like 90 players right now. And Urban and would be like,
show up.
It's going to be fine.
Up in June, he would tell some guys not to come. He would tell them, oh, actually we couldn't get you in academics, or, oh, sorry, your doctor said you didn't have enough cartilage in your knee and you had to go home if he thought you weren't good enough. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
And that wasn't even like the portal era either. Like you couldn't just like, you couldn't just like go to a different team. It was, very, very hilarious how things have changed when he was, I mean, he did everything he could to maximize the roster.
100%. Yeah. As you should do. And I think that's a huge difference. And it shows up also in the draft picks per team, right? Ohio State had one of its lowest draft production goals in years, like basically since Urban's first full recruiting class completed its fourth year of college. Ohio State just had the lowest 5-year draft production since that happened. It's down to like Tressel era levels, basically.
Yeah.
And sure, some people might say that because a bunch of guys came back in 2024, and that's fine. It's whatever. But like, there's basically a tier at the top of draft production over these 5 years. There's Georgia with 49 players, Alabama with 46, Michigan with 45, and LSU with 43. Then a big drop down to Ohio State with 36 and Penn State with 33. And another big drop down to, there are five teams in the 20s, Clemson, Notre Dame, Texas, Oklahoma, and Oregon. A big drop after them. And then A&M, Tennessee, Florida State, Miami, Ole Miss. Like those tiers happen because you have players who are sitting on the roster for 4 years and doing nothing. Like,
yeah,
just absolutely nothing. Like it's crazy to see, right? Like they, I mean, I don't know. Like I talked about it a bit in the article here, but you have guys like, you know, Trey LaRue spent four full years on Ohio State's roster.
Incredible.
Played 16 total snaps. Grant Toutant was the team for 4 years. He played zero snaps of football. He never played a down after 4 years at Ohio State on scholarship.
That's just stealing Cameron, at that point.
Yeah. Cameron Babb averaged 25 snaps per year over the course of 5 years. Court Williams hasn't played a game since week six of 2022. Zen Mikulski played 21 offensive snaps last year and had no injuries. He's going to year four on the team. Tyler Friday played 72 total defensive snaps in years four and five combined. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, there's still players you can point to on the roster right now, right? Like, I mean, Zen, I mentioned Zen Mikulski. He's still there. Like, they took Lorenzo Styles to switch positions, who hasn't played at all. He might be a punt returner. That's the big guy they got out of him. They have John Furlman, who's a fucking scholarship long snapper. You know, they took Ohio's second string tight end to come potentially be their starter at tight end. They have Bennett Christian. Has he ever played a down at Ohio State? I can't recall one. He's in year three now. You know, George Fitzpatrick limping to doing nothing in year three. You have Keenan Nelson they just took, who's never going to play any meaningful minutes. There's, like, it's getting fewer to some extent, but they're not cutting enough guys, not signing enough guys. It's very frustrating. And, I mean, you can look at different reasons for why, like, the high school signings, Ohio State is not, like, that far off from the pack. They're kind of in the middle here. They signed more than a few of these schools, but, I mean, they signed five fewer than Penn State, six fewer than Oregon, six fewer than Michigan, 15 fewer than Georgia, 20 fewer than Alabama. Those two names at the top that have a big difference from everyone else probably stick out to everybody, right? There's a reason that that matters that those guys get extra recruiting class over 5 years. Yeah,
that's the thing too. Is like I can't tell you how many times I have heard Ohio State fans, when it's coming down to like recruiting class rankings between Georgia and Alabama, like, it's Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, or like you're measuring the classes against each other. Ohio State fans are always saying like, well, if we did it on an average recruit basis, like Ohio State is doing pretty well. It's just, it's easy to do if you sign 5 or 10 more recruits. And it's like, yeah, man, why isn't Ohio State signing 5 or 10 more recruits? Like, that's not the argument you think you should be making. Like, yeah, why not? You know, there's a reason why it's valued. Like, add 5 to 10 more per class or whatever. Like, there are definitely those years where Alabama has 10 more recruits than Ohio State has. And it's been that way for like 5 years. It's not like an anomaly at this point.
No. And there is an old saying, right? That quantity has a quality all of its own. And that's the truth in recruiting too. Like, sure, you want to sign players who are good on average, but like, you know, Penn State and Michigan's classes, like, look at Michigan. Michigan is a full 3 points lower than Ohio State in player recruiting average. They're 90.15 instead of 93.45. Michigan just won a national championship. They signed a lot more players, took more transfers. They were smart about it. They kept guys for longer. That has a difference when they're able to get rid of their worst players or replace them with transfers because they're aggressive in the portal. That has a result that Ohio State should have. And everyone's like lauding Ohio State's portal class. It took what, 7 guys in this cycle? And I don't know. Like, what is that?
That should be like,
it's
the
nice
average.
To do, yeah. I guess that should be the average. Yeah. It's fine, but it's like, wasn't a huge class. Yeah.
I think it's cause two of the guys that they got were really shiny. I mean, well, 3, I guess, if you get Julian Sain too, like Julian Sain, Caleb Downs, and, who's the other big one?
Will Howard, Quinshon Judkins.
Yeah. Oh yeah, both of those are good too. Yeah, I was thinking Quinshon Judkins. I forgot about Howard even. I mean, they're just high profile. They're high profile signings, and that's probably why people are freaking out about it. But like, the number itself is not anything to write home about. Like, that's what it should be every year. Like 7 to 10.
And the answer is like, you have to do one or the other, right? I don't necessarily have a strong leaning. Like, I do think high school recruiting, in my opinion, is the better tool. Like, Georgia only took 2 more transfers over the 5 years than Ohio State did, right? It's not that many more, obviously. But they signed 15 more high school players, right? And then you have, or more than that even, I think. You know, then you look at Michigan, who signed only like 8 more high school players, but they signed, you know, 20 transfers instead of 17. Like, they had a good mix of the two. Alabama took more transfers than Ohio State. They took 28 instead of 17. They also signed more high school players. Like, whichever way you do it, it can no longer be this rolling average of, you know, what does it come out to? About 25 a year. It has to be a little bit closer to 30 a year.
28, 30.
Yeah, that has to be the number. It's just frustrating, man. I don't know. And it's like Ohio State's recruit classes got a bit smaller over the time. Like, they were at 25, 24 in 2020 and 2021. They dipped down to 21 in 2022. Signed 21 again in 2023.
They used to be regularly
back up
like
to 23.
They used to be regularly like 28. Yeah. Well, they used to have the rule. I don't think the rule exists anymore. You can technically sign as many players per class as you want, correct? Now?
Yeah, I think there's a certain way you're supposed to count it or something like that. It was but like 25 for a bit. I think they got rid of it with COVID or something.
I think that rule is now gone, but the old rule used to be it was 25 allowed per class, but you could over recruit the 25 and count them backwards after players left early for the NFL draft. So you could count them against players that were leaving early.
Which meant it wasn't a real rule. Yeah,
essentially. Yeah. You could backfill it or something like that.
Yeah.
So you could almost always end up with like 28 to 30 if you wanted to, depending on how many players you like got out of there. And a team that was churning out NFL players as often as Ohio State was, yeah, I mean, easily you can get to 28 every year with that rule. But point being, you weren't even allowed to sign technically more than 25, and Ohio State was doing it every year, you know, 27, 28 players. And now Ohio State struggles to get 25.
Yeah. And like, if you want to look at the why, I think part of it is just attitude, right? I think they like, there's some arrogance there where they seem to be a little more precious with who they're offering than offer as many players. I think the reason behind that they say is there's certain, you know, off the field shit they want to hit, yada, yada. They kind of tell themselves that stuff, but there's also like this overconfidence in some players they think they're going to get, so they don't build out backup options. We've seen that a lot happening on the defensive line or running back the last few years. It happens other places too. They're late to offer at the party in some places. Yeah. But look, I mean, over the 5-year period, I track the number of offers too. Ohio State is offering so many fewer players than their top programs. Clemson had by far the lowest total. They offered only 442 players in 5 years. Ohio State offered 785. That's 100 fewer than Texas, about 400 fewer than Alabama, about 500 fewer than Georgia, about 600 fewer than LSU, about 650 fewer than Oregon, and around 900 fewer than Michigan or Penn State over a 5-year period. So Michigan and Penn State both more than doubled up Ohio State number of offers. Oregon about doubled them up. Tennessee, I'm not advocating for this, just for an illustrative example, they tripled Ohio State's number of offers over a 5-year period, which is crazy. But like,
Jesus.
Yeah, that's too many players. Tennessee offers anyone with a pulse. Yeah, they offer anyone with a pulse. But I mean, Ohio State's consistently averaging under Ryan Day about 140, 150 offers per year, whereas Georgia is averaging a bit closer to like 250. Alabama is averaging, what is it, works out to like 230. Like Ohio State should absolutely be in that 220 to 250 range every single year in offers. Let's see where they're at right now, curiosity's sake.
I think the thing too is like you were mentioning, I don't think the small classes, at least the past couple years, while you're looking this up, I don't think that's been an intentional decision, because if you look back, you can go back and listen, you know, a few episodes after the season, I guess Ohio State was still actively recruiting like 10 or so players out of high school that ultimately didn't end up in the class. And so I don't think that it had anything, like, I don't think Ohio State consciously decided that they wanted to end up with the number of players that they ended up with. I think they swung and a missed on the majority of the guys down the stretch, which is the same thing that happened on the defensive line class the previous year too. And so like, I don't think in a lot of ways, I don't think Ohio State is strategically saying we want to have smaller classes every year. And I think this is now we're kind of getting into the weeds of why, because it's not an intentional decision. Ryan Day is not like, we're going to sign less players this class, but it's the process that's having them arrive there. And like you're getting to, like, it's offering fewer players, losing recruiting battles, not getting the guys that you think that you're going to get, like those sort of things. And so that's the process you have to change, even if the approach is correct.
Yeah. I mean, I think also like, there are certain positions, which probably just comes down to the individual recruiter, where they seem to be a bit lazier in offering, right? Like, I get why they're selective at quarterback and at wide receiver. They get top-end guys there every single year, right? Yeah. That happens every time. Even with Tim Walton, I get if Tim Walton wants a smaller offer list. He really doesn't, but he could, because he gets a lot of guys that he wants. If you are Justin Fry or Larry Johnson or, you know, Carlos Lachlan, right? You got to prove something to me as to why you should offer fewer guys at your position until you actually start landing those top end guys as your first choice. If you do that 2-3 years in a row, that's fine. Fuck the backup options. I trust you.
Right.
But it's like bad practice to not be building relationship with kids, the bare minimum which is offering. Like if you offer a kid his junior year, you can probably get a visit. You can probably get to come up to campus. Like that's not that hard to do.
Yeah.
And that gives you a baseline where if you decide you want him later on, you already have a relationship and aren't playing catch up where they have with so many recruits and do all the time.
Right.
But yeah, right now Ohio State has put out 169 offers, which is pretty much, it's a little bit ahead of the last 2 years, but it's pretty much in line with 2021. A bit under 2020. I'm sure they'll offer another 10 or 15 guys for the rest of the year, but most of the hay is in the barn on the offers. You don't offer that many guys late in the class anymore.
Right.
You know, Georgia has already offered 268. They have 99 more offers out than Ohio State. Alabama's offered 220. That's with a coaching change. So I'm sure they're gonna have more offers coming out. And they're a late building recruiting class. Like there's not really a good excuse to be doing like this little. I think like, I don't know how to be so pejorative as to call it an effort problem or they don't try hard enough, but like it's an attitude problem. Like, I don't know. I think they just have to be a little more willing to pull the trigger on some of these offers and not be like so arrogant as to assume every kid they offer is going to try to commit to Ohio State. Because what the fuck, what's the downside? What happens? They're not committable offers. They're not written down in stone.
Right.
You just give the offer as an interest point. What's the harm?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I mean, I totally agree. I will say the only thing that I would feel worse about if I was reading this article is, God, imagine being a Clemson fan. All of these charts where it's like Ohio State's bad, but Clemson is almost half as bad as Ohio State is, like, or almost twice as bad. Like look, like Clemson offering like 70 in 2024, 104 in 2023. Imagine offering 70 kids a scholarship, like 70.
It's obscene. Yeah.
Like that means you have to win more than like a third of your recruiting battles to have like a full class.
Yeah. That's to insane. Their credit, I guess they do it. Yeah. But yeah. It's not like, you know, that is horrible process. And it's going to get harder. I mean, like Dabo is obviously just dying.
Oh, he's cooked. Right? He is cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's that again, like that's not the company you want to be in when Ohio State is right next door to Clemson on every one of these charts. Like that's not cool.
No. And I also want to point out here, like, I think some people are probably going to say that there's more churn at the other schools, meaning they have more players to replace than Ohio State does. I do want to say, I think that's a bit of a chicken and the egg question. Like, do Georgia and Alabama have more transfers because they're oversigning and kicking more players out? Or do they have them because they're losing backup players more easily? I don't think that Georgia or Alabama are struggling to pay up to keep their top players. They are not losing, you know, productive starters, future stars. Like I checked it out for each of those schools. There's maybe between like 2 to 4 players at each of Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State in the last 5 years who have transferred out and gone on to be like an actually good player elsewhere that would have been a productive asset for them. It doesn't happen very often, which is more incentive as to like, hey, if you think a guy might suck, get rid of him now. Like if he hasn't shown you anything in the first 2 years, do not wait until year 4 to replace him. Like the ultimate example, as we talked about on the show, is fucking Enoch Vamahi, who they waited until 5.5 years into his time on campus. They had no opportunity to backfill him to let him transfer after he did nothing that entire time and had no opportunity to make a move for that because they didn't get rid of him after years 2, 3, or 4 when he obviously wasn't going to be good. That's my complaint. I mean, Georgia averaged about 2 more transfers out per year over the course of 5 years. Alabama's number ballooned a ton this offseason. Because Nick Saban left, they had 31 losses this offseason. But if you average out what they were doing over the previous 4 years, they would have been, you know, right in line with Georgia. The other biggest difference, too, is that Alabama and Georgia developed better and produced more draft picks. Alabama had 10 more draft picks over a 5-year period. Georgia had 13 more. Again, a bit of chicken and the egg. I think if you're getting more talented players, you're going to produce more draft picks, yeah. Which then leads to more spots to replace those draft picks. I think just this cycle where they're taking smaller classes and not backfilling is kind of a vicious cycle that leads to more problems, where you have less space to operate in because you're not creating spaces, you're not getting rid of bad players. That means you're not producing more drafts. You know, mediocre guys are staying for longer. It becomes a problem all around. It's very, very frustrating to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. And I think it's especially frustrating when it's kind of a new problem. Like it's a problem that Ohio State had corrected under Urban Meyer, that they're kind of reverting back to it being a problem, I guess. And I want to say, like, we a lot of times like go back and compare Ryan Day to the way that Urban Meyer did things. And a lot of times we don't do the reverse and say Urban Meyer fucked this up and Ryan Day has improved X, Y, and Z. One, that's because we're haters and we're not here to
not in the business of creating excuses for the guy who lost to Michigan three times in a row.
Yeah. And so I want to get that out there. Like that's mostly the reason. But like the truth is, like, we're just identifying problems. I'm sure we are not like blind Urban Meyer, like shills, I guess. Like I would never advocate replacing Ryan Day with Urban Meyer right now. Like
I wanted Urban gone like at the end of 2017.
Yeah, he needed to.
Yes, I was ready to move on from him.
But that doesn't mean that there weren't things that were correct about the way that he ran his program that I wish Ryan Day would have continued. I think there are things that Ryan Day corrected about Urban Meyer that, you know, were good. And there are a lot of things that we frankly bitch about a lot that are not. And we like to hit on the things that messed up, but I just want to get out there that we are not of the mind that like Urban Meyer was perfect and that Ohio State should have just kept him. And he's the beacon of everything that Ohio State should be as a football program. Like that's not true. In just several cases, it's just an easy comparison.
But he did have the right obsession over talent acquisition. Like I think 100%. Urban, because of his background in football, like Urban was never a play caller ever. Like Urban didn't develop an offense. He like stole the power spread. Not stole, you know, borrowed it from what was his name? Northwestern. Randy Walker. Is that right? No.
It's not Etzel. It's Walker. You're right.
Yeah, Randy Walker and Kevin Wilson, who he ended up hiring.
Yeah.
Like he borrowed liberally from those guys and implemented their ideas because he saw it was a useful thing. But really, how he won games is he was a motherfucker in recruiting. Urban went out and got the best talent constantly. He always pursued at all points of time. Flips, whatever you could do.
Best coaches too.
I know he says shit about how he doesn't think the transfer portal belongs to college football. It's kind of a game, whatever.
He would have been a mercenary in the transfer portal.
Oh my God. Could you imagine how aggressive he would have been like talking to players' parents he recruited 3 years prior to just get any kind of talent upgrade?
Oh yeah.
Like he was vicious about it and he would be
that
now.
Dude would have been tampering like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I would have loved it. I guess my complaint here, and look, everything I've said so far has been data driven. Like that was all kind of the information I have on it, everything I gathered. The next thing I'm going to say is entirely like opinion based or projection here. Because I'm trying to figure out why they're doing this. Like it seems like one of those things that is so obvious, and it's an impossible question to answer because I asked the same thing about Parker Fleming for so long. I couldn't figure out how anybody with a brain who spent as much time as Ryan Day surely does thinking about his football program could ever come to the conclusion that it was a good idea to have one of your staff spots wasted on a bad special teams coach. I could never understand it. In much the same way, I don't understand how they can look at this era and have the conclusion they have and have the actions they have. I just don't get it. And like you said, maybe 2023, 2022 were just fate, like where they just couldn't land the players at the end. Not fate, but just, you know, happenstance, right? They couldn't get those guys at the end and they didn't have anyone to replace them. So they ended up with a smaller class. They're trying to get a larger one. Maybe that's true. I think there is also, much like they had in the coaching thing, by trying to be the smartest guy in the room on staff construction, I think they're trying to do it in player acquisition too. I think they think their shit doesn't stink. I think they're a bit arrogant that they think that, oh, our guys are Ohio State guys. These are high caliber kids. They're great people with great families. They want to be at Ohio State. They care about the brotherhood and the culture. And we don't want to upset the apple cart by bringing in some outsider who's not good enough. And there are times where they have pursued those upgrades, right? Of course, Ryan Day made his bones by ruthlessly pursuing Justin Fields to replace Tate Martell. When it's an obvious problem, or there's a very obvious upgrade and talent opportunity, Ohio State will go after it and get that player. Did it with Judkins, did it with Fields, did it with Julian Sayin. There's times where they're going to do that and be ruthless about it and say, fuck everyone else. But if there's any gray area or any question about it, they are not going to take the aggressive choice. It's the same thing they do in like on-field calls, right? With fourth down decisions or go, no-go decisions. Like, if there's any question that it could be a risk, they could fuck it up. They're not going to take the aggressive swing. They never do it. Like, even in the portal this year, right? There were some players who I think are really fucking good football players on the offensive line who could have solved Ohio State's problems. I'm particularly thinking about Fernando Carmona, who was an eminently gettable tackle out of San Jose State, who ended up going to fucking Arkansas, Pittman, Asperity before he gets fired half of the year. And Ohio State passed on him because they weren't sure if he was better than Josh Fryer or not. I don't know. Maybe they don't have eyes. I'm not sure why they would think that. Maybe they haven't watched any film. But there's just some decisions where they're not willing to take a risk. It gets very, very frustrating because they just kind of turtle. Ryan Day turtles in games. I think he turtles in player acquisition. And it just leads to this, like, fait accompli where it's like, you know, everything's a binary outcome. It's like, in this class, either Ohio State, you know, is going to close on Jordan Davison or they're not. And they're going to take a lower quality player. There's not a backup option. They're trying to be aggressive and go get someone else to come in first to be, you know, kind of upset, you know, to see what they can do and shake things up. They don't play with leverage. It drives me fucking crazy, dude. As you can tell, I get very stressed out about it, but it just seems like there needs to be someone they hire, and maybe it's me, who knows, to be in their meeting rooms every day and tell them to get their heads out of their fucking asses and go do some work. Like, just take a fucking chance. Stop being so scared all the time. They're so conservative.
Yeah. No, I think more than anything else, the scholarship, the offers numbers tell the story. Because, like, yes, that's where you can see the conservativeness in what they're doing. It's not who the number of players that they ultimately sign or anything like that. It's like, yeah, I don't know. That's where you can see is just how conservative they're being with the players that they're, and how selective they're being with the players that they're willing to, you know, offer a scholarship to Ohio State. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's completely valid. Conclusion, I guess, is that they are scared. They are being too conservative, too cautious when this is, I mean, recruiting is the lifeblood of a program. It's the way that you acquire talent. Acquiring good players is the way to win in college football. And you've seen it time after time after time after time. Like, it's vitally important. And, if there's anything in the world that you should not be conservative with, it's, bringing in players.
Yeah, and it's especially frustrating because it feels like they're at their most conservative on the trenches. Like, yeah, that is where, you know, like Larry Johnson, because of his philosophies about recruiting, his, you know, very outdated style, tends to bring in fewer players, not have backup plans, because he trusts these kids for some, you know, God knows what reason. And you know, Justin Fry, frankly, has been lazy in his offers. Like, there's, like, they've just now, in the last, like, couple, you know, maybe last month, have offered like six or seven new kids. They seem to be getting the game. But the question is, why did you wait until May of 2024 to offer kids who are going to decide in July of 2024? The film has been out for 5 or 6 months. Like, yeah, what changed? Like, are you watching like the no pads bull rushes at camps that right. much? Like, what really changed your opinion? Like, review the film faster, make decisions sooner. Get kids on campus. You're not required to take them. You can tell a kid no at any point in time. They do it all the time. There's no one making you,
yeah,
you know, take these recruits. Like, it's very easy to do. And it's just frustrating. Like, and that's those are the positions that get hurt the most, right? Like, Ohio State's play, except for like the secondary in 2021, right? Like, in every other position group has been good enough that they could win titles if the trench play was better. Again, Kyle McCord last year, quarterback, the secondary in 2021. There's a couple exceptions. But by and large,
man,
every other position group's been good enough. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I was going to say even last year, like, you look at it, and most years, I'd agree that, like, the Kyle McCord year, that wouldn't have been good enough. But, like, the teams that were in the playoff last year, like, Ohio State lost to the national champion by one possession on one final drive. Like, if the trench play was better, like, honestly, they lost because the trench play wasn't as good. And they gave up a, like, that interception was directly caused by the offensive line sucking. So, like, yeah, I mean, they lost to the eventual national champion because their trench play was not good. So, yeah.
Right.
No, that's all it is. That's
when you see the conservatism again. And, you know, again, in the transfer portal, like I talked about. Is it, I don't know, maybe just because Ryan Day trusts Justin Fry's opinion too much, which he has no reason to do based on the evidence we've seen.
Yeah.
But I don't know why it's happening. I would love to be a fly into the wall to figure out what the decisions are, what's causing this. But if they don't change it, like, I'm going to keep the same stance of Ryan Day I've had for a while. I think it is entirely possible that Ryan Day catches the right year. He has the right quarterback on the right team with the right mix of veterans. Maybe it's this year and you get the right schedule and you're able to get one national championship. That could happen. They could get their way to one national champion, but he, unless he fundamentally changes his approach to talent acquisition, is never going to be the Urban Meyer, the Kirby Smart, the Nick Saban that we're all pursuing. And like, yeah, sure. Those guys are all top 5 or 10 coaches in the history of college football. I get that. I understand that, but that's what we're pursuing, right? Like the resources you have in Ohio State, you should be in the mix every year, more often than they have been. You should be trying to get better every year and not turtling. Like to take the resources we have and to kind of be passive with them is so frustrating. I feel like the roster is just not maximized. I don't think he gets it. I still don't think he fucking gets it. And I'm sorry to be so negative because I know right now it's like everyone's, you know, hope springs eternal right now at this point of the year. And as we're all talking about how, oh, I don't know, Ohio State, best defense in the country. Will Howard's better than Kamel Cord? I don't know. It could happen. That's all great. It could happen. I don't have any faith in a 12-team playoff that Ryan Day can navigate it with this little depth of the team and with the way he approaches in-game game planning. I just don't see it.
Yeah. And I think, as you mentioned too, I think the area where it's been the biggest concern is offensive line, as you said. And I think the problem with offensive line, I think any other position, as you've seen, is it's... pretty easy is probably overselling it, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's pretty easy to find a player that can start immediately, either out of high school or on the transfer portal at most positions, whether it's quarterback, whether it's wide receiver, whether it's running back. It's pretty hard to do on the offensive line, especially out of high school. You can't just find a kid out of high school and be like, well, that's my starting left tackle next year. Like that, the times that that happens is like an absolute anomaly. And so the fact that Ohio State is not maximizing their numbers on those players is really concerning, because if you do that like 3-4 years in a row, then you have exactly what Ohio State has. You have a collection of, you don't have enough players and none of them are all that good. And there's not really any help coming in the future too. Like what do you think Ohio State's offensive line is going to look like in 2 years? Are you convinced that it's going to be better than what they currently have? Because I'm not, you know, like
no, I'm definitely not. Yeah. I mean, I guess theoretically Tegra will still be here in 2 years. Carson Hinsman could be, you know, Montgomery and Ian Moore. Like if all four of those guys who haven't really proven anything yet, if all of them hit, you're still a position short and have to get someone out of the portal. Yeah. And what else do you have? Like, do we think that George Fitzpatrick is going to be anybody? I don't. Do we think that the other guys besides Luke McCarthy they brought in the last couple of years are going to be anything? I'm very doubtful based on the high school film. So, like the same way we saw the iceberg coming from a mile away and Greg Studrow was recruiting. Look, it's not quite good enough. There's not enough dudes in here. Like, look at some of the fucking freaks that Alabama and Georgia play early in the draft, the offensive line. I know those guys are harder to find in the North than they are in the South, but God damn, dude, like you're allowed to recruit the South. You're allowed to talk to those players. Like it's possible.
Yeah.
It's just very frustrating. It's just very frustrating to see some of the mentality to it. Some of the lack of approach. Like, I mean, we all better pray to God they get David Sanders this year.
That's oh man.
Say.
Yeah. He can have whatever he wants. Give him the Jeremiah Smith package.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, Jesus, man. Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty frustrating. I am, I think I could also pretty easily find, I don't know, like seven-ish players who don't belong on this roster, who are just not Ohio State good, who could be recruited over that I know won't be. And it would take at this point like 2 or 3 years to fix all the challenges, and like they better start this year.
I mean, that's again, I just said it. That's the problem with the offensive line, is it's not an easy fix. It takes years. And so you can't just like, oops, I fucked up, we're going to fix it in this recruiting class. You can on some level on the defensive line. You can't on the offensive line. So
no. And it sucks. But you know what doesn't suck, Kevin?
Shit.
Why don't you tell the good people about our good friends at Home Field Apparel?
Yeah, we swore that we weren't going to do this at the end of the podcast again, but here we are at the end of the podcast telling you about our friends, Home Field Apparel. They make the best vintage-inspired collegiate apparel. It's so soft. It is great for pretty much anything. You can wear it to work out in. You can wear it around your house to, you know, be a little snuggly in. You can wear it outside the house to look good in. You know, it's good stuff. They're good people. Great designs. It's, you know, coming up on college football season, and I know they're in their bag this off season trying to get some new styles for all of their various college football teams. I'm not sure there's a team that you could really concoct that they would not have collegiate apparel for. So if you are in the market for some college football apparel to get you ready for the upcoming season, they've got you covered. They also have you covered with NASCAR. I believe they just put out a line of NASCAR stuff. They've got some NFL gear, all good stuff. And they're great people, great company. And if you have not purchased from them yet, you can use the code MeetAtMidfield for 15% off your first order. Go buy Home Field Apparel, subscribe to our website, meetatmidfield.com. And, I think that's going to be it for our free edition of our podcast. We have bitched enough. We're going to head over to the premium edition, where I think what we got cooking for the premium edition. I think we're going to talk a little bit about Jaden Rashada suing Florida, because that's very funny. I love that.
Yeah, I got to talk about Keenan Nelson, the new transfer safety edition.
That's true. Yeah.
Going to talk about another driving related incident at Georgia, and maybe some stadium renovation stuff. I think that's in the news lately. We can maybe talk about that. So we're gonna kick over to the premium episode. We'll see how much time we have for all that. We're gonna talk about a lot of it. So we will see you guys on the premium, which again, if you want to listen to, you can subscribe to at meetatmid.com. And the episode will be in your inbox every single week. We'd love to have you come join us. Great time to sign up. So come check us out and subscribe to the website and come join us on the premium pod. We will see you next week for another edition of the free podcast.